Okay, I'm broadcasting the audio feed live. I'm getting ready to start with the Dhammapada in a couple of minutes. I might as well just start. But there are people tuning in at 9. If you're tuning in to listen, we're not going to do live video until after the Dhammapada, but tonight's Dhammapada will probably be pretty short. And no, I'm not bowing to the pressure of people looking for shorter videos. Go elsewhere. But I've got lots of short videos, actually. So you can go watch them. Hundreds of them. But this one will be pretty short anyway. Okay. Test, test, no mic. Test, test, test. Test. Right, hope that's okay. Hearing this noise in the background. Test, test, test. Okay, ready to go. Hello and welcome back to our study of the Dhammapada. Today we continue on with verse number 111, which reads as follows. Yo cha vasa satang jive dukpanyo asamahito Ekahang jivitam seyo panyavantasa jhayino. Which means if one should live 100 years without wisdom, of little understanding, and unfocused, unconcentrated. Ekahang jivitam seyo. Better it is to live. Better is the one is the is a life. Better is a life of one day for one who is wise and meditates. Very similar to our last verse. As I said, we're going to have a series of these, and so we'll probably go through them quite quickly. The story for this one also is quite short. So here we have a story about Kondanya, but it's a monk named Kondanya, not Mahakondanya, the Kondanya that many Buddhists are familiar with. This one is Karnu Kondanya, Karnu. And Karnu means stump. So he was Kondanya of the stump. He was an Arahant, and he was dwelling in the forest, and he lived alone for much of the time. And he became an Arahant while he was in the forest, and he was on his way back to talk to the Buddha, to let the Buddha know that he had become an Arahant. And on his way back, he became tired, and so he stopped and sat down on a rock and went entered into a meditative state. Maybe he entered into Nibbana, maybe just a jhana. Probably he entered into a cessation, a state of attainment of Nibbana. We call palasamapatti, when someone who has become a sotapanna, sakadagami, anagami, or an arahant, they can enter into a state of reviewing Nibbana, going over the path that they have attained. Not the path, going over the fruition that they have attained. And so they enter into cessation for 10 minutes, 1 hour, 10 hours, 24 hours. And during that time, it's complete cessation. So they are completely oblivious to the world around them. Completely oblivious. There's no seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, or thinking. No even sense of time passing. It seems as though that time is just missing, except there's a huge sense of peace that it lasts even after the person comes out of the state. And so during that time, he would have gone in for maybe a day, 24 hours or something. And during that time, a group of bandits, a large group of bandits, similar to in our last story. But these guys had plundered a whole village. They had destroyed and robbed an entire village. And gone in with their guns. No, they didn't have guns, with their bows and arrows and their swords, and killed and raped and pillaged, and or maybe just robbed, because they don't seem to have been all that evil. So they came up, and it was getting dark, and so they wanted to rest as well. And seeing this flat rock that the elder had sat on, they saw this rock, and they saw the elder, but it was getting dark, and so they thought he was a tree stump. And so the head bandit took his sack with all his valuables that he had robbed, and actually placed it on the elder's head. Just plopped it down on top of him, or maybe on his shoulders or something, just over top of him. And the other robbers piled up their sacks around the original one, around the stump, sort of covering the monk completely, and burying him in their sacks. So there were 500 bandits, or a large number. Probably, usually you'd think 500 might be a bit of an exaggeration for one band of bandits, but a lot is the idea. And then they slept and spent the night, and the elder spent the night completely oblivious as to what was going on. In the morning, they wake up, light out, and they start to take the sacks off one by one, and the chief picks up his sack. Or as they get close, they see it's not a stump, and he pulls his sack off, and it's a monk sitting in meditation, completely unmoved, stiff and unaffected. And they were spooked, and they thought it was some kind of evil spirit, and so they started to run away. And at that moment, the elder came out of the attainment, and so he turned and looked at them, and he said, "Oh, don't be afraid. I'm a monk. I'm not here to not here to curse you." And they were shocked and moved, reasonably so, seeing obviously an incredibly powerful meditator who spent the whole night covered in sacks full of heavy valuables, again, it speaks to this, the power of the attainment. There's this idea of the power of true meditative attainment makes one invincible. You know, I mentioned this Tibetan monks who supposedly go into trances, and then they go and sit in snowbanks, and they go into trances in maybe the fire element, and they actually melt all the snow around them. And they have contests to see who can melt the most snow. I don't know, this is what I've heard. But there's lots of fun things that supposedly happen. And if you want, you can, if you want to test, you can meditate for yourself and see what sort of things occur. You know, a lot of people experience what we call astral travel. Some people are able to see things far away, hear things far away. Some people are able to remember past lives. Some people can see into the future. Very strange things can happen when you meditate. Of course, it's not the goal. It's not why we meditate. But anyway, here we have this idea of being somehow invincible when you enter into these states, physically invincible, covered in heavy, heavy things, and not being disturbed. And so they were suitably impressed, and made up their minds to become monks. They said to the head bandit said, "I'm going to become a monk under that. I'm going to become a follower of this guy because he's got the power." Here we thought we were powerful. You know, we have this power over people, making them afraid and being able to take their belongings from them. But that's not real power, not compared to this guy. Clearly he has far more power than us. And so they became monks. And so he made monks of them all, just as Sankicca had done. And he went with them to the teacher. And when they got to the Buddha noticed and said, "Oh, Kondanya, you've got some students with you, have you?" And Kondanya told them what had happened. And the Buddha looked at the monks and he said, "Is this truly what happened?" And the guys are like, "Well, yeah. Is it true? You're a bunch of bandits." "Well, yeah, you know." And the Buddha shook his head and said, "Better for you to live one moment. Better for you to live but a single day, meditating, being wise, you know, engaged in things that are truly to your benefit, that truly bring happiness to you and to your mind, that truly bring good things. Better to live one day like that than to live 100 years evil and committing such foolishness as you've been engaged in." And so he made a connection. Made the connection to the Dhamma. They say that's what these stories at the end. It always says he connected it with the Dhamma. Whatever the situation was, he points out the Dhamma in regards to the situation, and as a result, having made the connection, he spoke this verse, "Yo cha vasasadang jive," and so on. So a short story this time, and a verse very similar to our last one. There's not that much to say. The difference here is whereas the last one was was in regards to morality, dusilo. This one is in regards to wisdom. In fact, it's interesting because the three things go together. These two verses point out both sides of it. So concentration is the defining factor here, but you have wisdom on the one hand and morality on the other, and these three make up the three trainings of the Buddha. Together they describe the Buddha's teaching, they describe the Eightfold Noble Path. So they are the path of practice. Yes. One way of explaining it is you start with morality and you become focused as a result of being ethical. Your mind becomes focused because you cease in engaging in things that distract your mind or disturb the mind. And once your mind is focused, in focus, then you can see clearly. and that's wisdom. So these three to go together. So it's rhetoric. You don't have to pick either or. The Buddha isn't saying either you can do concentration and wisdom or you can do concentration and morality. He's just talking about good things, and he's addressing a group of people who could best appreciate certain aspects of the teaching. So for some people, ethics is more important, more interesting, and more applicable. For some people, wisdom will be more applicable. So these verses are tuned to their audience, usually. And probably in this case, after desanavasane, at the end of his teaching, all 500 of the bhikkhus became arahants. Isn't that awesome? It'd be nice if that sort of thing happened these days. After teaching about the Dhamma, we all became arahants. But you can't blame the Dhamma, you have to blame yourself. That our minds are so clouded that it takes much more than just the simple teaching. But there's something to this idea that simple teachings can lead to enlightenment, because the truth is not hard to understand. It's actually quite easy, and once you've understood it, it's almost as though you don't know how you can miss it. You know, for the most part, we are clear about reality. It's just we add on so much more, or we ignore certain things. Like, for example, talking about free will and determinism, if it's about free will, then we add a soul into the equation. If we believe in determinism, then we ignore the mind, we ignore the choice. We ignore the first-person nature of reality. Or maybe think of it as just physical. When we are addicted to something, we tend to know that the addiction is causing us suffering, and yet we don't stop. You know? We're like insane people. When we're angry at someone, you make me so angry, as though when someone makes us angry, you make me so angry, as though we're blaming them for our own suffering. Because we're suffering. When we're angry, we suffer. Blame. And so the teaching is actually quite simple. If you receive these simple teachings and you become in tune with them, you know, if you're hearing it from the Buddha, it's strong enough to jar you out of your state and really bring you in line with this truth. And it's so forceful and so confidently delivered by someone who is so pure and so perfect, that it really changes you. There's somehow kind of a magic in teaching in that way, when you're taught and when it's delivered with confidence, you know, the confidence of the Buddha, the power of the Buddha. So there's that. We're to blame for not being born in the time of the Buddha and having actually listened to him. Instead, you have to listen to me. But the Dhamma remains the same, and the path is still there. It just might be more difficult of a climb, more difficult of a path. But if we don't walk it, then we can be sure to fail. If we practice, we can't be sure if and when we'll succeed, but if we don't practice, we can be sure that we will fail. So there's that. Anyway. That's the Dhammapada teaching for tonight, that we should be wise and meditate. We practice these two things together, not just meditating, not just focusing our minds, but also cultivating wisdom. Again, not just being concerned with wisdom without meditating and thinking that we know everything, studying and thinking and so on, but actually coming to see for ourselves. And when we meditate, this is what we see. This is what happens. We see impermanence, we see suffering, we see non-self. We see through our delusions of stability, satisfaction and control, or self. And we come to see that things are not the way we think. They're not worth clinging to. They have nothing, no characteristic of them that is that makes them worth clinging to. We start to see things as being without value, without merit, not a stable. We see that our own mind and everything in the world around us is not a stable, dependable refuge or platform on which to base our goals and our aspirations and our desires. And so we give them up. We give up our desire for such things. And that's the best way to live. If you live your life one day like that, it's far more valuable. It's on a whole other league from living and living well. You know, people talk about living, living the good life, carpe diem, seize the day, eat, drink, and be merry, you know, like angels in heaven who enjoy their pleasant things up in heaven. And they think, well, that's what it's all about, right? People will say, this is what it's all about. I mean, I know, I used to be there. We'd party and dance and sing. I remember going to dances when I was younger, and everyone was so excited and so much, because there's so much chemicals in the brain, the adrenaline and so on, and dopamine, I don't know what kinds of chemicals involved with dancing and enjoying yourself and partying and drinking and laughing and joking and playing music and playing musical instruments and so on. And then it doesn't make you happier. You don't actually feel happier afterwards. So that kind of life is actually pointless. In the end, you finish and you die, and that was it. You've gained nothing. In fact, most likely you've cultivated all sorts of addiction and attachment and aversion that's going to cause you problems in this life and in the next. So there's that. Better to be mindful, better to be wise, better to be focused, better to see things as they are. So that's the Dhammapada for today. Thank you all for tuning in. Have a good night. Okay, now we're going to do live video broadcast. You can get to it. Hello everyone. Did that work? What did I do? We didn't need that light, did we?
No. Yeah, the light seems fine.
Okay. So, welcome to our live broadcast. It's something to say tonight. Oh, you know what I was thinking? I'm going to Florida this winter. And, it's kind of personal. It's not really, so I don't know whether anyone's actually at all interested or what you think, Robin. But I was going to get presents for my mother and my brother. And I was thinking, what could I do? What could I give them that we'd both agree was a good present? Because like if it was up to me, I'd give them a trip to a meditation center or something. I think that'd be more about me than about them. So I thought we could go to a homeless shelter or something and make a donation and give out food or, you know, that kind of thing. And then I thought, well, wouldn't it be neat if, or maybe it would be neat if our online community got involved and we did some kind of winter giving thing together, where we all, I mean, because I actually can't give a gift because I got nothing to give, but I have many people who are happy, who are, you know, want to help me do good things. It's like Ajahn Tong. Ajahn Tong has no money, but he has millionaires and billionaires who want to back him up. So he just says, let's do this, and suddenly he's got people helping him. Now, it won't be on that scale, certainly. But maybe that would be kind of neat, no? And then take pictures of it. I don't know what there is in Tampa. I was looking a little bit, and it's all Christian stuff, which is fine. There are some. There's one organization that's non-sectarian and seems to be secular. They say secular, so they're probably mostly Christians, but they sound kind of open. And I have no problem working with Christians as long as they're not pushing God. What do you think, Robin?
I think that sounds like a really cool idea.
Doesn't have to be big scale or anything, but
no,
then
it's...
I could present it as a gift. I could somehow give like receipts. What do you call these? Some kind of certificate of that you've given, like on behalf of I gave on behalf of you, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so a gift certificate.
Well, it's not a gift certificate though. It's a donation certificate or something. Like. You give them the thing that says that you gave $100 or whatever on their behalf.
Okay, I don't know the name. I know what you mean. I don't know the name of it. That's a nice idea.
Yeah, so I actually emailed just to see what was there, this one group, and they haven't gotten back to me yet, although I think it was just yesterday, and probably over the weekend they were not doing anything. So we'll see if by the end of the week, we'll wait till the end of the week and maybe they'll contact me.
Maybe your friends at the Florida Buddhist Wihara might know of something.
If Sundamali is watching, or if she ever watches this video, maybe she can help out with that. Give me some good ideas. Yeah, the people, that's a really good idea. I'll email her if she doesn't email me after this. Sundamali, if you're out there, email me. Let me know what you think. If there's any sort of charity we can get involved with, do a charity thing. Because I'd like to, it'd be neat if I could actually get my family out to take part in that. No? I'll be there for 8 days. We won't be doing much. We'll just be sitting around enjoying each other's company. So it'd be nice if we had a day when we could do something.
That is nice. You know, sometimes families go and they volunteer together at a soup kitchen or homeless shelter.
I mean, I don't know what the situation is in Florida. I mean, it's not like here where it's very cold at this time of the year, so they really need it. Like if we were doing it here, it'd be awesome because there's people who are in pretty desperate straits as it starts to get cold. But in Florida, it's warmer, so it's not that sense of urgency. I mean, the real thing is that it's Christmas and you know, one thing we did in California was all the Thai Buddhists got together, and I just showed up to appreciate and take part. But they went to an old age home and gave gifts, just like care packages, because a lot of old people actually their family doesn't come and visit them, or they don't have family, you know. I don't know about that. I don't know how it works. But yeah, some old age homes, it's actually quite unpleasant. Or anyway, it's... They don't get visitors, and... I don't know. Not very well off.
Sometimes people end up being placed somewhere far away from their family, and...
So that's something. Maybe I'll wait and talk to Sundamali. That's a good idea. But I might need help.
Oh, we're there. We can definitely discuss that at the volunteer meeting and see how we can help.
Awesome. It's always nice to do concerted. Is that the word, concerted?
think that means focused.
Concerted, like working together. It's an interesting word because it's a concert. A concert is concerted effort. Coordinated effort? The word is concerted, which is it's
collaborative effort.
No.
Concerted is jointly arranged,
yeah,
planned, carried out, coordinated.
That's it. Concerted effort was the word.
Right.
It's an interesting word. It refers to a concert, or it's the same as a concert, right? It's where the word concert comes from. The concerted giving, no, concerted effort or concerted good deeds is important. It allows us to work together and it brings us closer as a community. It's an excuse. It's an encouraging thing because you see other people doing it, right? So you feel more confident about it. It's more powerful as a result. You're able to do bigger things than doing just by yourself, and that is encouraging. Like if you just do a good deed by yourself, it feels like a drop in the bucket. But when you get a lot of people doing a little good together, it's much more powerful. And so, yeah, awesome. Let's do it. Let's do something.
Yes.
We'll do it for Florida. Do some good deed for Tampa Bay area. Hopefully my mother isn't watching. I don't think she watches these. She sometimes tunes in at the beginning. She likes to see me.
She might have tuned in at 9 then, so hopefully, because this one was a little later, your secret is safe.
Maybe. Do we have any questions today? Looks like we don't, actually.
Just a couple of nice comments. Just want to say how much I enjoy your Dhammapada talks on YouTube. For me, the longer, the more teaching I get from them. For me, the longer, the more teaching I get from them. Please keep up the good work. And gifts that keep on giving. Wonderful.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. I've gotten several encouraging comments. I wasn't really thinking, I did say that I don't think there's anything wrong with longer videos either. So it's not like I'm self-conscious about the length or anything. It's funny, I remember giving talks and sometimes you're under a time constraint and so someone goes and it's so funny, like going over the allotted time span because there's not much you can do. It's you teach what you teach. And I remember like looking up and saying, oh, it's already two hours have gone by and people are starting to kind of, well, feel it. Not easy to be an audience sometimes. But it does depend on the teachings.
How was the flash mob, Bhante?
No, it didn't happen. No one showed up. So, one man showed up and just to talk to me. He works at McMaster and he's going to come by on Wednesday.
Nice.
So, the flash mob thing, rather disappointing. But not very well coordinated. See, I could have just stayed and meditated on my own, but I was kind of determined not to do that because I don't want to give the impression that I'm advertising, because it's this whole thing about looking, standing out, right? I don't want to stand out. I don't want it to be about me. Anyway. Didn't happen. Which is okay. It's not really for me. It was more for people who wanted to come and meditate. There was one woman who said she would be there and didn't show up. Maybe she showed up late. I didn't stay. I only stayed 10 minutes. I stayed 20 minutes, but I got there 10 minutes early, so. Maybe I should have hung around. But it's been like, that's like the third time that I've gone somewhere and no one's showed up, so. Forget these people. I got a call today from someone in Toronto who wants to come and do a course here. Don't know how he found out about us. Probably Meetup, right? That's the big thing. Meetup has our telephone number on it, does it?
Meetup does have the telephone number, but I don't think Meetup directly talks about the residential courses, but it does link in your website and
You called to ask if we had courses, so somehow you heard about us. Maybe we're on a few directories, I guess, now, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of links on the Meetup page, so he must have found some information.
But are we on, like, Yelp and Google, and what are we on now?
We're on Yelp and Google, and...
So does that mean if I had go to Google Maps, I see us?
Actually, you know, I forgot to put the code in that you gave me, so I'm not sure if you would get the driving directions, but...
But eventually it's going to be on the map, right?
Yes.
Right near TriStar Computers and Comic Connection. I got, it's not really for this broadcast appropriate, but I got, I'll talk about it later. I don't want to talk about it. It's nothing big, it's just, it's something that, well, I guess I just don't want to make the person... Someone sent me a gift, and I'm not sure if I can use it, because it was from the U.S., and it doesn't mesh well with Canada. So there's this... This isn't the first time this has happened. I've got another gift from Tim Hortons, so... But it's for the U.S., and it doesn't mesh with Canadian Tim Hortons gifts. So I'm not even sure if I can use it at Tim Hortons. I haven't tried, but because it's a little more awkward to do so. But now the same with Starbucks. The Starbucks gift that may, I don't know if it'll work or not.
Well, but you can bring them with you when you go to Florida.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Although we definitely have Starbucks here. Not so many Tim Hortons other than New York State. Upper New York State is filled with them, I think.
I don't know if you can use the I think I can maybe use the American one, American Tim Hortons here. I think there was something about that as I emailed them about it. But the Starbucks one, it's a little bit different. I can try. I think I'll try. Anyway, I guess I just wanted to bring it up because if anyone did want to do the help keep me alive thing, better to do it in Canadian terms because the American isn't really, thing isn't really working. The other thing is I'm not getting, for some of the, I don't know if I want to go into this here, but I'm not getting, for Pitapit, I'm not getting people's names, so I have no way of returning. So if you send me something and I don't get back to you, I may not have the proper information to do it. So it doesn't mean I'm not appreciative or didn't get it.
No, that's good to know about the American version of cards. Mm-hmm. And generally, it seems that the websites are, there's .ca in the web address somewhere. So,
yeah, somehow someone went to the wrong Starbucks address because there is a distinct .ca address, and it's a whole, it's exactly the same except the address. I couldn't register on the .com one because it looked for a zip code. So I was like, wow, I can't even use this card. Mm-hmm. And then I found, oh, there's a Canadian version. Just tested it out, because that's what I actually had put on the website, right? On the webpage. And that works, because then it asks for a postal code.
I'll see if there are Tim Hortons in the Tampa.
It is owned by Burger King now.
Oh, okay. We'll see if there's any in the Tampa, Florida area.
No, it's not a big deal. Because I'll be with my mother and she's going to take care of me. She loves to feed me. It's the Italian upbringing, I think.
And you can bring her to Tim Hortons.
This is true. I could, or Starbucks. If I got the Starbucks, I could bring the whole family, treat them out to a Boxing Day brunch at Starbucks. They don't really have brunch there, do they?
No, I think I don't go to Starbucks very often. I think they have mostly little pastries to go with the coffee.
They do have pastries.
As best as I remember it.
Spinach. That's what this card I'll use for. It's got these nice pastries with spinach and cheese and stuff, which is sustenance. Anyway, I'm not, I didn't, it's not a big deal. I don't want people to think I'm advertising these, obviously. I mean, that's pretty
No, I
common.
think it's useful information because, you know.
But I'm not trying to hint at anything because there's people have sent me lots of stuff. People want to do it, want to help keep me alive, that's great, but there's not a pressing need at this today about it.
So there is a Tim Hortons at 401 Channelside Drive in Tampa, Florida.
No kidding. Well, we're not in Tampa, we're in Dunedin, so it's even to go into Tampa is a bit of a chore.
I'll check that then. I'm sorry, how do you spell Dunedin?
Dunedin. Dunedin.
No. Well, not within 5 miles anyway.
Yeah, maybe Starbucks. Probably Starbucks.
Oh, I'm sure there will be a Starbucks.
I'll take them for Starbucks coffee. My mom drinks coffee. My stepfather drinks coffee. My brother probably drinks coffee. I'm sure he does. Take them for a good Starbucks coffee morning.
There you go.
It's already paid for. So it's a wonderful opportunity to create family goodness, I don't know.
Yes.
There's so many people. One of the things about being back a little bit closer to society is there's so many people who need support, you know, and there's so little support for people who need it. That's really shameful. I mean, there's really a need for this kind of thing, which is kind of why it's funny that no one's taking advantage of it. Or it's slow for people to, and students are so caught up in their studies. I mean, as many of them don't even have would never have the time. But this morning I was, this woman who's now become probably my best friend at university, it's kind of funny. Tomorrow morning we'll be sitting again together in philosophy. And I mean, there's no danger of anything. She's got a boyfriend, so it's not like there's a danger of her getting attached or something. But I mean, so many people like this. She's got two jobs, and she's, I mean, I don't know, I guess I shouldn't broadcast people's lives on the internet, but so she was, and she's a wonderful person. She's involved in peace advocacy. She said she's got both Muslim and Jewish relatives. And she's got a half-sister, I think, in Syria, or she had a half-sister who died in bombing. And so she's very much into the peace work and helping refugees, and she's very involved in our Syrian refugee thing. And just a really sensitive and nice and kind and thoughtful person. And struggling, you know, because she can't get a student loan for some reason. I mean, I was talking this morning why she, you know, it's got to be wrong. There's got to be some way to appeal it, but yeah, I don't know. It's not my business. And so she started meditating, and she was supposed to come out today. And I don't know, it's amazing that we're not more together as a society. We've lost our sense of community and supporting each other and so on. I think students are sensitive to this kind of thing because, you know, you see people hanging out and supporting each other, but just very, very busy and overstressed. Now, these people it would be an awesome place for community, the university, but it seems there's not so much because people are too busy. Too stressed, you know, tired. People sleep 1 or 2 hours a night. Before our quizzes, people are sleeping 3 hours because they had to study for the quiz all night. Upwriting papers. I remember when I was in school 16 years ago, stumbling into the office to submit a paper, and I was, you know, the world was like this. It was blurring in front of my eyes. and I could barely walk because I had been up for who knows how many hours finishing this essay that I ended up doing not very well.
One day, did you have any experience with universities when you were in Buddhist countries?
Very little.
I'm just wondering if it's different.
Well, Buddhist universities are fairly laid back, it seems. They're not well accredited, so. Yeah, they don't seem all that rigorous in their training. I mean, I've heard things about secular universities in Asia that make them very difficult, but they've traditionally been fairly poor in terms of creating comprehension, and they've been much more about memorization. And so they don't prepare for... Monastic schools are still very much like that. Like novices who learn Pali in Thailand, it's ridiculous how little knowledge they come out with. They've memorized everything and they can pass the exams, but they know very, very little. And as a result, the teachers, if you ask the teachers a question, they're like a parrot. All they can do is parrot back what they've learned. They can't analyze and give you an explanation. Very few of them, some can. You know, the really good ones, and the ones who went on, I think. There's a couple that I know who went on and did the really high Pali studies. So they're serious and they're more open-minded about it, more thoughtful. But Asian people don't stress like we do. It's interesting. I mean, that's a gross generalization, but the societies tend to be far less stressed. I mean, I don't know Japan and Korea, probably different. I heard they can get quite stressed, but I think in a different way. They still seem much more together. But Japan is weird that way. I've heard terrible things about how they snap. Not snap, but like when they have parties and so on, they really, really go to extremes.
The people in Japan, from what I've heard, they work a lot of hours and they don't even take off the days that they're allowed to take off. And there's a lot of stress that way. They're very competitive. But that's probably the exception to the rule.
But Southeast Asia maybe is what I'm thinking of. Thailand, Laos, Cambodia. I don't know about Burma, Sri Lanka. These Buddhist countries, you know, we're pretty laid back. It's just a generalization. I mean, people do stress, but not the way here, you know. There's not nearly the concept of taking drugs or taking medication, you know, like antidepressants or anti-anxiety. I'm sure there are people taking them, but as far as I know, I mean, it's funny because we've in the West, we've come to accept it. It's socially acceptable. Where in Asia, there's a culture instead to deal with it, to help people deal with it. You've got a support group and the social cues are there to keep people from needing to take this medication. But in the West, since medication is the acceptable thing, I would argue that it is more necessary to take it for those people because they don't have the support network. They don't have the other means. So it's an interesting argument that part of keeping people from needing to take drugs is... the society that we live in, having a society that that supports people who are depressed, you know. But we don't really support that. And we've come to, I think pharmaceutical industries have really pushed this idea that better living through chemistry, right? That never really took off in Asia, I don't think. Not in the same way anyway.
It's amazing with the drug commercials. I watch 1 hour of TV a day. It's the news.
Oh, yeah.
And every commercial is for prescription medication.
Yeah. In Florida, my mother when my mother's watching the news, I see it, and it's shocking, you know?
Yeah, and they just make it look like so much fun to be having this medication or that medication. Then they give all the side effects, which are up to and including death.
Yeah.
But still, obviously, people are... willing to take that chance.
Yeah, I mean, it's like those warnings labels on cigarettes. We were talking about this in the other day when I was talking to this smoker and these smokers, because he said cigarettes are more, he prefers cigarettes over this vaporizer stuff. And I said, well, that's it. It's like can you become conditioned to like things that are actually kind of horrible, you know, inhaling smoke. And I said, yeah, that's it. And I said, so even with those labels, it was something, somehow at some point I said, even with those labels, and I said, I bet you probably look forward to, you probably associate the labels with your clinging, you know, you associate with your addiction. So when you see these terrible labels, I don't know if you have them in America, you have these labels with people with cancer, lip cancer or mouth cancer from smoking. Do you have those?
I don't know. I haven't looked at cigarettes in a very long time.
In Canada, they have these graphic logos, pictures of people on the packs, on the cigarettes.
There were TV commercials like that with people who had lost their vocal cords and things and had all sorts of horrible things happen to them. I don't know if they still have those, but they were pretty graphic.
Anyway, we have strayed far. Let us end on that note. And I'll see you all tomorrow. Or you'll all see us tomorrow. Thank you, Robin, for helping out. Have a good night.
Thank you, Bhante. Good night.